56. We'll read the entire psalm, 13 verses. Be merciful unto me, O God, for man would swallow me up. He fighting daily oppresseth me. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up, for they be many that fight against me, O Thou Most High. What time I am afraid, I will trust in Thee. In God I will praise His word. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. Every day they wrest my words or twist my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather themselves together. They hide themselves. They mark my steps when they wait for my soul. Shall they escape by iniquity? In thine anger cast down the people, O God. Thou tellest my wanderings. Put thou my tears into thy bottle. Are they not in thy book? When I cry unto thee, then shall mine enemies turn back. This I know, for God is for me. In God will I praise his word. In the Lord will I praise his word. In God have I put my trust. I will not be afraid what man can do unto me. Thy vows are upon me, O God. I will render praises unto thee. For thou hast delivered my soul from death. Wilt thou not deliver my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living? In the subtitle, the inscription right before, right above the psalm, we're told the author, which is David. We're also told the occasion of this particular psalm. It's when the Philistines took him to Gath. The historical record of that is in 1 Samuel chapters 21 and 22. And what happened was David, fleeing from Saul, came to the city of Gath, where he was seized by the Philistines, brought before King Achish, and was here, if you remember, that out of fear and unbelief, David takes matters into his own hands, pretends that basically that he was insane, and he's eventually driven from Gath. And from there, you pick up in 1 Samuel 22 and verse 1, he went and hid himself in a cave called Adullam. And it was in that cave that David, feeling as a failure and great humility, comes over him. And there in that despondent situation, he wrote Psalm 34 and Psalm 56. But it was a time of personal crisis for David. It was during this time that he pens under the inspiration of God this psalm. The structure of the psalm, the contents of the psalm, serve as instruction and an example for you and I, not only in the hour of crisis, but in everyday life. We see many lessons, many encouragements in this psalm. I want to speak this evening on principles of a life well lived. Principles of a life well lived. Everybody lives their life, saved and unsaved, everybody lives their life. Very few, even amongst the saved, live life well. But life ought to be lived well. And there are certain principles that must be followed habitually if we're going to have a well-lived life. And some of those basic principles are laid out in this psalm. Before we get to the principles, we want to look at the setting of the psalm because it pretty much pictures the life of a child of God. So as you look at the psalm, consider the circumstances under which we find these principles that we'll look at here in a few minutes. The circumstances or the events or the experiences under which the psalm was written, again, are a very apt picture of our own circumstances, our own events, and our own experiences of life in general. And these circumstances, these events, these experiences do not change the principles. In fact, they have no bearing upon the principles. These principles are bedrock principles. Nothing changes the principles. We see that from reading the psalm that there were enemies. Notice verse 2, mine enemies. Verse 9, he again mentions mine enemies. And these enemies are referred to throughout the psalm by personal pronouns. We see that from verse 2 that they were many. Mine enemies. Go down a few, the next line, it says, be many. Mine enemies, be many. They are numerous, and they are of different variety. They're not all the same, though they do have some of the same characteristics. We also see that these enemies are active. In verse 1, he fighting against me, or he fighting daily, oppresseth me. In verse 2, we see that they fight against me. In verse 5, it says they, that is mine enemies, they rest. Not R-E-S-T, but W-R-E-S-T. That is, they twist, they fabricate my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. In other words, he could feel the malice of his enemies. In verse 6, it also says they gather themselves together. They hide themselves. That is, they wait for opportunity. They mark my steps. Just as a hunter would mark the trail of their game. When they wait for my soul. They mark my steps when they wait for my soul. In other words, David was prey. In verse 7, he asks a question. Shall they escape by iniquity? That tells us the nature of their activity. The nature of their activity was sin. We also see the intentions of these enemies. Verse 1 says, for man would swallow me up. That's their intention, was to swallow up David. He mentions this again in verse 2. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up. That says something about the nature of his enemies. They were ravenous beasts. From verse 5, it says that they meant him evil. Every day they wrest my words, all their thoughts are against me for evil. They meant their intention was to do him harm. Their intention was to do him evil. So we see the enemy. We see their activity. We see their intent. And we see that their activity and their intent was ongoing. It was persistent. In verses 1 and 2, he says, he fighting daily oppresseth me. Every single day. And then in verse 2, mine enemies would daily swallow me up. And in verse 5, every day they wrest my words. So David has enemies. These enemies are working. These enemies have evil intent. And they never take a day off. It's every day. Again, Saul writes this psalm. He was fleeing from Saul. Every day he was faced with these enemies. Day after day after day were these enemies. And so it is with you and I. It may not be a particular enemy, but there are things that we must deal with day after day after day after day. It's every single day. Also in the psalm, he makes mention, verse 1, of being oppressed. He fighting daily oppresseth me. That is, this ongoing activity of the enemy was designed to repress David. It was designed to subdue him. It was designed to depress him. It was designed to discourage and to dishearten him and to weigh him down. And it did. I mean, you read the Psalms, and David struggled with depression. He struggled with this. We see that there were times, as you read the Psalms, it's almost as, I'm not saying he was, but it's almost as if he were suicidal. And it was every single day. It was this constant conflict and affliction. In verse 3, he mentions being afraid. What time I am afraid. So there were times when he was afraid. That is, he was alarmed. He was apprehensive. He was timid. He was uneasy. He was worried. He says, what time I be afraid. In verse 8, he speaks of his wanderings. Notice, thou tellest my wanderings. David is honest. He doesn't say every single day I was close to God. He says, there were times that I wandered, and Lord, you know all of my wanderings, whether it be a physical wandering or a mental wandering. Many times we wander in our minds without wandering physically, but we wander. It speaks of that which is digressional. Also in verse 8, he mentions my tears, speaking of sorrows and burdens. And then in verse 13, he mentions a very dangerous possibility that he was aware of. He says, deliver my feet from falling. He realized that he was in danger of slipping. He was in danger of collapsing. He was in danger of moving to a lower level spiritually. And any time we move to a lower level spiritually, and we do all the time, any time we do that, we have fallen. We may not have fallen from the truth as far as denying the truth, but we fall. We go to a lower level spiritually than where we were before. That's a fall. And David knew all about this. There were many times when he went to a lower level. Spiritually, it's very obvious as you read the Psalms. That's one of the great things about the Psalms is I don't care who you are or what your situation is, you can find something in the Psalms in which to identify. They describe our lives. And all of this was very real to David. It was all very present. And it was ongoing. Again, these were daily happenings, daily experiences. And David felt all of these things very intensely. And again, they are very descriptive of our everyday battles, whether it be everyday battles with outside forces, there's plenty of them, or everyday battles with inward forces, there's plenty of them as well. But none of those things are enemies, the activity of our enemies, the intentions of our enemies, their persistence, should have any bearing upon the principles that are set forth in the song. And regardless of our oppression, regardless of our fear, regardless of our wanderings, and all the dangerous possibilities, these principles must be an integral part of our life if we're going to have a life that is well lived. And that ought to be the desire of all of us, to have a life that is well lived. So let's look at these principles. First of all, God is to be the central focus. There are enemies. They are active. They have evil intentions. It's not that we ignore those things. It's not that we're oblivious to them. We're very aware of them. But they're never, ever to become our focus, where we cannot see God. God is to be the central focus. And we see that throughout the psalm. We see he is referred to as God 9 times in the psalm. The Hebrew word is Elohim. And it expresses the power of God. But he mentions that name God 9 times. Verse 1, verse 4, verse 7, verse 9, verse 10, verse 11, verse 12, and verse 13. 9 times he mentions Elohim. Indicative of the power and faithfulness of God. He's also referred to as Lord. All capital letters. Jehovah. Indicative of his eternity. Indicative of his immutability. He is also referred to as the Most High. There in verse 2. Indicative of his majesty. Indicative of his sovereignty. But that's 11 references. Direct references to God. And in addition, there are 12 personal pronouns referring back to him. So that's 23 references of the Lord. So throughout the psalm, the focus in relation to David's circumstances, in relation to his experiences, the focus is the Lord. That must always be. Do not divorce circumstances your situation, your experience, do not divorce them from God. Don't look at them separate from God. And do not divorce God from your circumstances. If all you can see is your circumstances and you can't see God, you're in a bad place. You've lost your focus. It's very important that we maintain focus. The enemies are still there. The enemy's still working. They still have evil intent. They're at it every single day. But our focus must be God. Now notice also that God is the focus in the past. In verse 13, he says, "For thou hast delivered my soul from death." So if you look back in the past, and I wouldn't dwell on the past, but look back in the past, don't divorce the past from God or God from your past. Thou hast delivered me. Again, Ebenezer. Ebenezer. So he looks back in the past, and what's his focus? It's the Lord. It's God. So he's focused upon God. He's acknowledging God. In verse 8, God is recognized as his deliverer. Or in verse 8, he speaks of God's awareness of him and his sympathy toward him. Notice, thou tellest my wanderings. God was aware of all of David's wanderings. Put thou my tears into thy bottle. Are they not in thy book? As God was aware of everything, and God was sympathetic toward David. In verse 13, again, he is recognized as his deliverer. So again, throughout the psalm, David recognizes, acknowledges God, and this is in the midst of distressing circumstances. He acknowledges God. This is an example to us. Our central focus is to be God. God is to be acknowledged. Proverbs 3, verse 6, "In all thy ways acknowledge him." In all thy ways, in all thy circumstances, in all thy experiences, in all your situations, acknowledge God, recognize God, see God, focus upon God. You have to do that if you're going to live life well. You have to have a proper focus. You do not allow anything. You do not allow anybody to infringe upon focus upon God. So that's principle number one. Secondly, we must maintain personal connection. We must recognize that there is a personal connection between God and myself. Again, if you see God, but you do not see him connected to your circumstances, to your situation, you do not see him connected to you, it really doesn't do you a whole lot of good. You have to not only focus upon God, but you have to see that there is a connection between God and my circumstances. There is a connection between God and me. And we see this throughout the psalm. We see it in the way that David uses prepositions. Very small words, but words that speak volumes. Notice the preposition in, which of course relates to David's position, relates to his relationship with God. In verse 3, "What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. In thee. Verse 4, in God. In God. I will praise His word in God. Twice. Twice in that verse you have in God. Verse 10, in God will I praise His word. In the Lord will I praise His word. Again, in speaks of our position. He's positioned in God. Verse 11, in God have I put my trust. There was a connection between him and the Lord. Notice the preposition unto. In verse 9, when I cry unto thee. In verse 12, I will render praises unto thee. The preposition in speaks of our position. The preposition unto speaks of our direction in which we're moving. And both his position and both his direction involve the Lord. In God, unto thee. Notice also unto me. And it's in relation unto God. Verse 1, be merciful unto me, O God. Now that's God moving in His direction. Be merciful unto me. Notice the preposition for, verse 12. Thy vows are upon me, O God. I will render praises unto thee. I meant to read verse 9. This I know for. God is for me. God is for me. You see, there's a connection between him and God. So he's not only focused upon God, he is focused upon God in relation to himself. How God relates to his life. You can believe God. You can believe that God exists. You can believe everything this book says about God. But if you cannot make a connection, if you cannot see a connection between God and your situation, between God and your circumstances, between God and you, it doesn't help you. So that's the second principle. We must maintain this personal connection. We cannot allow the events, we cannot allow the experiences to sever this connection between us and God. Thirdly, there has to be an awareness of self and our own need of God. In verse 1, he says, be continual and ongoing, merciful unto me. That very request reveals that he had a recognition of personal unworthiness. Be merciful. Also, he had a personal recognition of need. Be merciful unto me. In declaring the intent of his enemies, he recognizes that his enemies would fulfill their intention if he is left to himself. In verse 3, what time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. He recognizes that there will be times when he will be given over to fear. But he realizes the answer to that fear is God. For someone to say, well, I'm never afraid, I never fear. You don't know what fear is then. Either that or you're lying. One of the two. There's going to be times when we're afraid. There's going to be times when we fear. But what do we focus on? He said, I will trust in the Lord. You can't focus on the fear. You focus on God. He also realizes his need of God in these times. He says, in God I will praise His word in verse 4. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. Flesh can do a lot of things unto us. But the focus can't be that. The focus has to be the Lord. In verse 9, he recognizes weakness in himself. When I cry unto thee, then shall mine enemies turn back. This I know. This I know. He recognizes his own weakness. That's why he cries unto God. In verse 13, he recognizes that he will fall and that he will fail without God. And that's why he prays for God to deliver him from falling, to keep his feet from falling. He knows, I will fall. In and of myself, I will fall. People who say, well, I would never do that, and get to thinking that they're above something, mark it down, they will fall. They will fall. We must realize our own weakness. We must maintain constant awareness of ourselves. Constant awareness of our need of God. Fourthly, maintain assurance concerning God. In verse 1, there's the assurance that God is merciful. Be merciful unto me. In verse 2, there's the assurance that God is majestically sovereign over all. Refers to Him as the Most High. In verse 3, there's the assurance that He can conquer fear. When I'm afraid, I will trust in the Lord. Why? Because God can conquer that fear. In verses 4 and 11, there's the assurance that God is greater than all the evil intentions of man. In verse 7, there's the assurance that God can defeat the enemy. Notice there in verse 7, shall they escape by iniquity and thine anger cast down the people, O God? He knew that God could overcome them. In verse 8, there's the assurance that God sympathizes with His people. In verse 9, there's the assurance that God is for His people. And in verse 13, there's the conviction of God's delivering hand in the past and the assurance that God is still able. Do not allow anything to shake your assurance in God, your conviction of the Lord. Fifthly, maintain personal trust in the Lord. It's one thing to say, I trust the Lord. It's another thing to do it. But we have to maintain trust in the Lord. Again, in the midst of adverse circumstances, God's person must be our focus. And there must be a relationship between God and ourselves. And there must be an awareness of our own personal need. And we're to be possessed with a personal assurance of God. If all of those things are in place, what is the logical thing to do? Trust God. It's just logical. If all of those other things are in place, I'm going to trust God. In verse 3, he said, I will trust in thee. In verse 4, in God I have put or placed my trust. And in verse 11, in God have I put my trust. Each time it's personal. My trust. It speaks of a personal faith. It speaks of a personal belief. The devil does everything he can to rock our faith. It speaks of a personal reliance, a personal dependence upon the Lord. A personal expectation from God. A personal commitment concerning God. Concerning God as He relates to us. Concerning God as He relates to our circumstances. See, you can tell everybody you know that's going through a trial, you just need to trust God. And that's true. They do need to trust God. But now, let's reverse it. And you find yourself in adverse circumstances. You've got to trust God. You can't allow anything to shake that. What does it mean to trust God? It means that I'm going to cling to Him. I'm going to cleave to Him. It means getting a tight grip upon God. You see, the trials of our life should not loosen our grip, it should strengthen our grip. Trust God. Now this trust in God, notice, led him to pray. In verse 1, he prays. He prays. In verse 7, shall they escape by iniquity and thine anger cast down thy people, O God? He prays. In verse 13, he prays. Trust in God will pray. Trust in God gave him victory over fear. He says in verse 4, in God I will praise His word. In God I put my trust. I will not fear, in the context of trust. Trust God. That's the way to overcome fear. Verse 11, we see the same thing. This trust in God filled him with confidence. Verse 9, when I cry unto thee, then shall mine enemies turn back. He's confident of that. This I know, for God is for me. That's what trust in God will do. Trust in God also filled him with resolve. He says, I will, I will, I will. Verse 3. What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. Verse 4, in God I will praise His word. We have to have a resolve. I'm going to trust God. I'm going to praise God. And we see the same thing in verse 11. In God have I put my trust, I will not be afraid. What man can do unto me. His resolve is related to his trust in the Lord. Sixthly, we must maintain personal obligation to God. In verse 12, he says, thy vows are upon me. Thy vows are upon me. He had made vows unto God. We all have. When you were baptized, you made a vow unto God. When you were married, you made a vow unto God. We could go on and on. When you became a member of one of the Lord's churches, you made a vow unto God. And since then, you've made other vows unto God. And we must remember our vows. We live in a day, of course, where a vow means nothing. But the vows that he had made unto God are upon him. He says, thy vows are upon me. They are upon me as a weight. In other words, I can feel them. This speaks of the fact that he felt an obligation to God. Whatever your circumstances are, whatever your situation is, whatever your experience is, you need to feel, I have an obligation to God. Nothing relieves us from that obligation. He felt a personal duty to God. We must never lose sight of that feeling. I have an obligation to God. I have a personal duty to God. That's true in our church relationship. I have an obligation to God. I have a personal duty to God. That's true in your marriage. You have an obligation to God. You have a personal duty to God. He felt a compulsion toward God. We ought to always feel a compulsion toward God. Don't ever feel because of your adverse circumstances that now all of a sudden you're not obligated to God. He felt an incumbency toward God. He felt a commitment toward God. So, regardless of the happenings of life, maintain a sense of personal obligation toward the Lord. This will lead to a life well lived. The enemies do not change any of these things. And then lastly, maintain a personal desire to live for God. Notice verse 13. For thou hast delivered my soul from death. Wilt not thou deliver my feet from falling? Now, he goes from the greater to the less. Thou hast, in the past, delivered my soul from death. Let's take that to mean salvation. That's the great. That's the greater. The Lord has saved our soul. If He's done the greater, certainly He can and He will do the lesser. Wilt not thou deliver my feet? That's a lot less than delivering my life from death. Wilt thou not deliver my feet from falling? And then this is what we want to notice. That. The reason he did not want to fall. That I may walk before God. That's his desire. That I may walk before God. This was God's instruction to Abraham in Genesis 17:1. He came to Abraham and he said, I am the Almighty God, walk before me. And be thou perfect. Walk before me. That means is that you live life conscious of God. You live life cautiously. You live life watching. You live life doing His will, pleasing Him. That ought to be our desire. Well, the enemy's doing this. Our desire ought to be walk before God. Yes, the enemy's doing this. This event has happened. This event has happened. But it is my determination. I'm going to live for God. Regardless of what anyone else does or says or thinks, does not matter. The psalmist said, it is my desire to walk before God. We must always maintain our desire to live for the Lord. To walk before God is to enjoy His presence. It's to enjoy God's presence in our life. So in closing, regardless of the happenings of life, regardless of what anybody else does or says, these are bedrock principles for a life well lived. If you change your principles based upon what someone else does, you will have a miserable life. These principles must remain regardless of whatever else happens. Regardless of the happenings of life, These principles have to mark our life. The principles are, God is my focus. Do we lose focus? Oh, yes, we do. Probably not a day that goes by that we do not lose focus upon God. And when we lose focus, we can't get stuck there. You have to pray, Lord, help me. My mind isn't where it ought to be. My eyes aren't where they ought to be. Nothing's where it ought to be. Lord, you have to redirect my focus. Amen. That has to be a principle. There has to be an intimate connection to the Lord. Again, I've said this before, and I'm convinced of it. You can see some of the most miserable people on planet Earth are the religious, because they believe some things about God in this book, but there's no connection to their life. You're better off being ignorant of God. To know things about God, but yet there be no connection, that is a recipe for misery. So we must focus upon God, but we also must have this intimate connection to Him, knowing that my circumstances are not separate from God. There has to be a personal awareness of ourselves, a personal need, a personal assurance, personal trust. No one can trust God for me. I've got to trust Him for myself. People can tell me to trust God, and they're right. But no one can trust God for me. There has to be a personal trust. And again, it's easy to tell people, trust the Lord, trust the Lord, trust the Lord. That's good advice. It's always good advice. Trust the Lord. But we have to make sure we do that and not just say it. There also has to be a sense of personal obligation. Every single day I am personally obligated to God. That's true. If you're lost, you are personally obligated to God as a creature to a creator. But for you and I that are saved, we are personally obligated to the Lord, and nothing changes that obligation. And then there is to be a desire for God, a desire to live life for God. If we follow these principles, if they become an integral part of our life, we'll have a good life. We will have lived life well. Doesn't mean we won't have trials. Doesn't mean we won't have adverse circumstances. Doesn't mean we won't have enemies. It means that we will live a life well in spite of all of those things. So, oh, that God would help us, that these would be principles integrated into our own lives every single day. The principles don't change. They remain the same. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us in